Montana is a state that has, I don't know, maybe even 1 degree of separation between any one person and another. So there's this tight network that allows you to very quickly gain access in the marketplace and have people working with you, for you, helping you to make your business grow in this state.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Many Montana entrepreneurs looking to enter into the global market turn to Brigida Freer, Executive Director of the Montana World Trade Center. The Montana World Trade Center is located on the University of Montana campus in Missoula and offers an array of services to assist businesses in taking their products into the world. Today on Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, we will learn about how Montana businesses can successfully operate on an international scale and what advice Brigida Freer can share from her 20-year career in economic development and international trade and commerce. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. It's good to see you, Brigida. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Arnie.
So tell us about the Montana World Trade Center, and why does Montana have one?
Good questions. Montana World Trade Center is a world trade center. There are 320, roughly, in about 100 countries around the world. Why does Montana have one? Well, that's interesting, and I think kind of speaks to the point that Montana really does punch far above its weight class. It's not common for a World Trade Center to exist in a place like this, but it does, and it's actually been in operation here at the University of Montana for 25 years.
So we're helping companies in Montana take their products and services around the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we do that in a couple different ways. We serve our clients principally, I guess I'll put our work into three different buckets. There's the prescriptive business assistance, which is sort of customized consulting. Some of our clients know where in the world they'd like to go with their product and service, and we're just kind of helping them to drill down a little bit further, gleaning very specific market information that can help them to make informed decisions. Some of our clients don't know where in the world they want to go with their product or service, so we help them to prioritize that and make decisions accordingly. Second bucket of work is really sort of the trade education piece. We're trying to give our businesses and entrepreneurs in the state the highest probability of success and succeeding in reaching those international markets. So there's an education piece to that. And then the third bucket is really kind of proactive activities designed to move that needle on Montana's international trade. So things like inbound and outbound trade missions that we organize, things like Montana World Trade Center taking the lead on our state's foreign direct investment initiative. So those are kind of the three buckets.
Related to trade missions, you went to Israel, and lo and behold, an Israeli company, Forecast, moves to Missoula, Montana. Tell us a little bit about how that transpired.
Yes, well, really, those were the two events. We went, they came. Oh, if it were that easy, but of course it's not. And, you know, as with any meaningful business initiative, it requires a lot of forethought and planning and a strategy. So, I like this example because it's one that you wouldn't expect to have happen in Montana. So sure, a couple of years back, I think maybe 2015, we at the Montana World Trade Center were really starting to look at how do we take a more meaningful approach to bringing foreign direct investment into our state. Absolutely, it has occurred organically in our state, principally in, you know, our agricultural or extractive industries. But how do we get more intentional and draw more in? So 2015, we started taking a look at the assets that we had and some of the relationships that we had with countries outside the United States, and in particular, their consulates, you know, who was really proactive about visiting the state, wanting to find out who we are, what we do. And that really had us zero in on our relationship with the Israeli consul general. At the time, that was Dr. Andy David, and he's since moved back. And now Shlomi Kaufman is in that role. But we had someone there who was genuinely interested in knowing more than just scratching the surface of Montana. And so we spent some time educating him and his team about the types of businesses that we have in our state. Yes, we are ag. Yes, we are tourism driven by our jaw-dropping landscapes. But did you also know that we have one of the highest concentrations of photonics and optics firms in the country outside of Bozeman, Montana? Did you know that we have a vibrant bioscience cluster in our state? Major pharma exists 40 miles south of Missoula, Montana. Did you know that we have cloud computing firms in our state that are rising to prominence every day? I mean, we have homegrown firms like Submittable right here in Missoula, Montana. So we spent some time educating.
And that resonated with them?
Yeah, absolutely it did. So there's the educational piece because they're trying to figure out then, okay, how can we form meaningful partnerships with Israeli firms? So we follow that educational process up with an outbound trade mission to Israel where we took a handful of firms there with us. It was horizontal trade mission, so we did have firms in bioscience, space, security, water treatment. Myriad firms joined us for that trip. And one of the things that I did, in addition to helping to arrange those meetings on the ground for our firms and making sure that they were well-informed to make decisions when they were on the ground, we did a separate track where we met with folks from Select USA, which is a branch of the U.S. government. We have commercial attachés in embassies around the world, and a subset of that, we've got Select USA personnel that are charged with helping to bring foreign direct investment to the United States. Many of these folks have time to just scratch the surface of what individual communities have. So it's really incumbent upon individual states, individual communities to make their case. You know, this is the business case we have for this industry vertical and kind of speak to those critical location factors that are important to industry. So we did that. We then met an inbound delegation of Israeli firms at Select USA, which is our nation's foremost foreign direct investment summit, which was started under the Obama administration and continues today. Had the opportunity to meet with Nassim and Mer at that time. These are the folks that ended up visiting Montana and 19 other communities around the United States before they made their ultimate decision to site in Missoula, Montana.
So Forecast visited 20 communities in the United States, some of them, I assume, larger than Missoula.
Yes.
What ultimately led to the decision to come here?
Well, this is a cloud computing firm, and we know that in communities like Missoula, Montana, we have a place that resonates with knowledge-based industries. We've got talented workers. We have relatively low employee turnover. This was actually a very big driving force behind their decision-making. You look at a place like Silicon Valley, and I actually was listening to an NPR story. It was a few months ago, but it was addressing turnover in the tech firms there. And it's devastating to have that constantly happening and expensive to have that constantly happening. So I do think that one of the things that resonated the most with them was not only talented, affordable workforce, but relatively low turnover. If you're paying a good wage, people want to stay and work for you. They want to be in a place like this. You know, we've got an amazing city, Missoula, Montana, which I'm sure you talk about on your show from time to time. So I think that was part of it. And I think they also recognized that Montana is a state that has, I don't know, maybe even one degree of separation between any one person and another. So there's this tight network that allows you to very quickly gain access in the marketplace and have people working with you, for you, helping you to make your business grow in this state. So,
and how many jobs will they ultimately create over the next few years here in Missoula?
Well, of course, that is a crystal ball question. This is a small technology firm, and I know that when they were interviewed, I believe for a local newspaper here, they talked about hoping to have 100 jobs within the next 4 years. And we'll see how that turns out. Yeah.
And that's significant. Those are 100 high-paying jobs.
Absolutely.
In Missoula. That wouldn't exist if you hadn't begun and participated in this process with them.
True.
Let me talk a little bit about our companies going abroad.
Yes, please.
Montana is a state of small business. Are the small businesses here prepared to navigate the complex international trade waters?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So we do spend a lot of time working with our businesses, again, to help make sure that they are informed when they finally choose to navigate into international waters. I would say that a typical pathway, you know, when I moved here 20 years ago, small Montana business really hadn't been doing much internationally, and then maybe they start to get some inquiries via their website. And so they start to think about it. So it was really kind of not a proactive endeavor initially, but now I'm seeing more and more firms that are absolutely understanding the opportunities that exist outside of the United States for them to grow not only their business, but jobs in their communities and gain insights from foreign markets that they never would have had had they not chosen to enter. So, you know, what our organization does, because Montana is principally small and medium-sized businesses, we act as sort of an on-call extension of their sales and marketing team or their business development team that's dedicated specifically to international. There are probably only a handful of firms in this state that have dedicated international departments. So we are there to help them, to inform them, so that they can make the best decisions when the time is right.
We recently had on one of our shows Spencer Williams from Westport
yes.
Design. And here's a little company in Bozeman, Montana that sells pet toys and products, and they're in 30 countries.
Yes.
So what sort of products and services do we have that people in other countries want?
Spencer's company is actually a member of the Montana World Trade Center. Glad to hear that you interviewed him. So Montana actually has a number of different products and services. You know, if you look at the export statistics for our state on our hard goods, it is heavily weighted to our agricultural and our extractive industries. Interestingly, there are some red herrings in our stats. For example, our export of cigarette products, which if you know the state of Montana, you know that we don't produce any tobacco per se. So it took us a while to figure this out because I kept looking at the export stats and wondering, how is it possible that we're exporting that much cigarettes or tobacco products to Canada? And it turns out that there are some Mexican tobacco and cigarette product manufacturers that are bringing product into the state and staging it at one of our border crossing areas, and then it's going over into Canada.
I think that's how at one point there were a lot of auto sales, international auto sales
right.
coming from Montana. We don't manufacture any automobiles.
Right, right. I mean, so was it, Mark Twain really popularized that phrase, you know, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics,
right.
right? So you do have to look carefully at our export stats. Also, not to get off too much on a tangent, because I will circle back to your main question there, but when you look at Montana's export statistics for our hard goods, you'll also see that a lot of our agricultural commodity exports don't get counted in those statistics. And that's just a function of how they make their way out of our state and they're then exported from another state. So you have to, you know, be careful when you're evaluating those stats.
One example of that is Flathead Valley cherries mm-hmm. that get sent to the West Coast and then from the West Coast get aggregated with
That's
other
right.
cherries and then they go to Japan.
Right, right. They sort of lose that identity and then they're not counted in our export statistics. True. You know, the other thing that is missing for export statistics, and this kind of brings us back home to real opportunity for Montana exporters, all the export statistics that you look at, you know, these are all basically based on numbers being reported, bills of lading as goods move back and forth across our borders. They don't count service exports. I was just talking about the knowledge-based industries that are thriving in our state right now. Many of those firms are exporting and selling to customers outside the United States almost immediately. So, you know, that doesn't get captured. I think that's a real opportunity for Montana firms.
Give me an example of one of those firms.
Sure. Well, I mentioned Submittable. This is a firm that is based here in Missoula, Montana. If you haven't interviewed him yet, I hope you will.
We have interviewed
him. Oh, good.
We had Michael Fitzgerald, their CEO,
right,
on here.
Right, great. Well, this is at this point, I'm not even sure how many different countries outside the United States that they're in. As typical with Montana, I'm sure they're doing business in Canada. I know they've got some business overseas in Europe. But, you know, right out of the gate, they were capable of doing this and had customers. This is something that I think bodes well for Montana's economy. To be the healthiest economy we can be, of course, we need to be diversified. So in addition to the core, you know, agricultural and extractive industries and tourism industries that have always been important to our state, let us endeavor to intentionally grow these kinds of businesses that have high probability of success outside the U.S. You know, though, there are some pitfalls. We just did, for example, a training on the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, which just went in. I know it rolls right off your tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah. Something I'm dreaming about every night.
Well, and true that many U.S. firms are not thinking about it, and many Montana firms are not thinking about it, but this is something that is in full force and effect as of May 2018, and it has significant ramifications for any firm that is doing business with the European Union, regardless of whether or not they have a physical location in the EU. So yes, when we're talking about, for example, our SaaS firms that are in Montana, if they're doing business there, they're responsible for being compliant with this law.
Explain to our listeners what a SaaS firm is.
Software as a service.
So the World Trade Center provides advisory services, you provide research for companies, you do training, you organize trade missions. How are you funded?
Well, we are funded in part by the University of Montana. They have been our generous benefactors for quite a long time, since the original license holders for the World Trade Center, I think that was Art Renander and Gray Manicky, if I recall correctly, gifted this license to the University of Montana. So we do have offices at the U. We are also funded by, eating what we kill. So, you know, we do have members that are part of our organization. We do put on trainings for a fee. We do also try to secure other funding from public and private sector sources to help us do more across this enormous state, because our service territory is the entire state of Montana. So it's a combination of funding.
Let me switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about you for a bit.
Sure.
Tell me about your background and what prepared you for this career.
My background. So, you know, on the way in here this morning in my car, this popped up that I had this radio interview, and I was taking my son to school. And he said, "Mom, what's this?" And I said, "Oh, it's this radio show that I'm doing about Montana entrepreneurs, and they tell their story." And he said, "What's your story?" And I said, "Wow, Wilson, I'm not even fully caffeinated. That's a very insightful question from a 12-year-old. But so my story is that I am actually an East Coast transplant evangelist here in Montana, from Pennsylvania originally. And I lived and worked, went to school in Washington, D.C., American University. And I always knew that I would be engaged in something having to do with international. And at the time, I thought that would be international relations, so something perhaps with the State Department. American University educates a lot of people in that regard. And then I really gravitated to business. And I had the opportunity to work early in my career for a firm that made a number of different personal and home safety devices and was really responsible for business development for some of their smaller markets outside the United States. Had a great opportunity to learn from a mentor in that firm, and had the opportunity then after a couple years to start thinking, okay, what do I want to do long term? And turns out my husband and I had been among the many people that take those vacations out west for ski vacations or hiking. And we started thinking, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could just live in a place like that? just for a year, you know, just to say that we did it. And then, of course, we'll come back and get, you know, back into our careers, because surely there's nothing happening in international business in Montana. And so we were very pleasantly surprised that we were completely wrong about that. And in fact, I had the opportunity to meet somebody who really changed my perspective about this state and what it has to offer. You may know him. His name is Arnie Sherman. Yeah.
For our listeners, in fairness and full disclosure, I did run the World Trade Center for a number of years, and I did originally hire Brigida on her first tour of duty at the World Trade Center.
Thank you. In your infinite wisdom.
Right, in my, absolutely.
Well, I think when you get to Montana, though, you realize that this is a place with abundant, unexpected talent. And I understand why entrepreneurship are so high in this state. You know, you have people that see opportunity and feel empowered to go after it here, because that's just what you do. And if you choose to make that leap of faith, I think that you will be so pleasantly surprised by the depth of support and talent and drive that you have here to help you grow your business. So,
what gives you the most satisfaction from your work?
Well, I like it when a plan comes together. I know that sounds cliche. So let me tell you, just as an example, I mean, I just spent probably too much time talking about our case study and bringing one particular Israeli firm to the state as a product of our foreign direct investment initiative. But that's something that took a long time to develop. And I saw it from the outset, though, right? This is the end goal. This is where we want to end up. These are the steps I think we have to take to get there. These are the steps that I think will increase our probability of success. And it doesn't always work out. It won't always work out. But when it does, that is just a really powerful feeling. And when you couple that with the fact that, you know, you hopefully are helping a business to get established that grows jobs and capital investment in the state, well, that's just icing on the cake.
So what questions do companies need to ask themselves to prepare for doing global trade?
Well, I think they need to ask themselves and have a real internal dialogue about bandwidth, for sure, because there's an opportunity cost to everything that you do in business. If you're going to pursue project A, you may not be able to pursue project B. And for sure, doing business internationally adds an extra layer of complexity. So I think you need to be honest in your firm about, you know, what the skill sets are. Do we have the bandwidth? What are the resources that we have that we think will help us to succeed? And if you have gaps in those resources, how will you seek partners that will help you to fill those gaps? And that's a role that Montana World Trade Center routinely plays. And then I think you have to ask yourself as well, are you in this for the long term? Because this is not generally something that happens in a snap. It's something that takes some time to develop. And those most fruitful international business relationships that you'll have are the ones that take time to develop, you nurture, and you make it clear to your partners overseas that you're in it for the long term. So I think those are some of the things on the top of my head.
When a company comes to the Montana World Trade Center for help or for assistance, do they have common problems? Do you see a sort of a common theme among businesses, whether they're, you know, in the service sector or in the product sector?
Well, the common theme is that they're generally understaffed, right? So they are seeking that, again, that sort of that on-call extension of their business development team or their sales and marketing team that can just help them track down this information and compile it in a way that allows them to make informed decisions. So absolutely, that's most common. But, you know, we deal with myriad different questions, anything from, hey, I'm hearing this from my distributor, is that a real thing? To, you know, we're thinking about attending this trade show. How can you help us evaluate whether it's worthwhile? Can you help us do some prospecting before we attend the show so that we can really maximize our time on the ground? So many different kinds of questions.
After being around the World Trade Center and Montana businesses for 20 years or so, Do companies here really understand that they're part of a global marketplace? I mean, we're pretty isolated here, but do they understand that? And if they do, you know, what does that mean for them?
I think they do more. They do understand the concept that they're part of a global marketplace now more than ever. And I say that because, well, a couple things have happened since I started engaging in international business. First of all, and yes, I know this dates me. So with the advent of the internet, and this has so dramatically changed how international business begins to happen and what businesses are capable of engaging in it. It's just really kind of night and day. When I think back to the beginning of my career and, you know, just how long it would take to do new product development with, you know, a factory overseas, it was several months to a year, even for a very simple product. That's changed completely now, you know, or finding good partners overseas and moving that relationship forward in a much more abbreviated fashion than it could have ever happened before. So that's been a big change and something that's really empowered Montana firms to do more. The other thing that really has piqued people's understanding of their place in the global community, even right now, what's happening currently with the United States trade policy, and I'm not taking a stand one way or the other here, but when we do see retaliatory tariffs happening on agricultural commodities or tariffs on imports for products. And there are a number of different importers in Montana that, by the way, employ many, many different Montanans. I mean, people realize in a way that becomes very clear in a hurry how they're a part of the global economy when it impacts them.
Well, I think most people, most of our listeners, might not understand that we pay for tariffs.
Yes.
You know, consumers and businesses here pay for tariffs that are imposed on other countries.
That's right. That's exactly right. It surprised me how misunderstood that was. And you're absolutely right. I was actually just in a session regarding U.S.-China relations a couple weeks back, and I began talking with a Montana-based importer who sells all over the United States, actually. And he stood up in the meeting and said, I just want to make sure people understand as we have this conversation, when we're talking about this, this is the direct impact that it has on me. This is, and more importantly, this is the direct impact that it has on my employees. And, you know, so it's misunderstood and it shouldn't be because it's important.
It's a complex, ever-changing global trade and business environment. How do you stay on top of it all?
I don't sleep enough. I listen every day, many times a day in the background throughout the day to especially NPR. I think it's an amazing news source, but many other sources. Also on staff, we started in 2018 our weekly trade news update. So I have some staff personnel that are really just aggregating trade stories that are relevant, of course, to the U.S., but in particular to Montana. So that's helpful to me and a service that I think a number of our members are really gravitating to as well. Because you're right, it can be completely overwhelming.
You mentioned early on that the World Trade Centers Association is a network of approximately 320 World Trade Centers around the world. How does that benefit Montana?
Well, because we're a part of this global network, when we are trying to help our businesses to, you know, either sell products overseas or even perhaps bring in a new supply chain solution through importation, we have this network of other executive directors, other teams that we can talk with about, okay, who are some trusted resources in your country or trusted sources in your country. So it's all sort of part of the wide net that we cast when we're helping our businesses to understand opportunity outside the United States. So it's great to be able to research things online, and it's much better to be able to validate your research findings through real human beings who know markets specifically.
What does the future look like for Montana World Trade Center?
Well, I think the future is bright. I think that we're going to continue doing those core activities that we've always done in terms of our export assistance. And I talked about the three buckets earlier. We're going to continue down this pathway of helping Montana to bring in the kinds of foreign direct investment that we'd like to see. We just talked about this Israeli technology firm. However, Montana is the number one producer of lentils and pulse crops in our nation now. We would be a fantastic place for a pulse fractionation facility. So I'm going to continue down this path with my team and see a bright future on the FDI front that I think will help to meet a capital need in our state as well. And then also, I have been working with some folks over the last year and a half or so to really kind of build out a physical presence for the World Trade Center here in Montana in a way that I think really positively distinguishes not only this program and this university where we're housed, but this community and this state. Now is the time for us to be messaging about our place in the global community, regardless of our size.
Brigida Freer, thank you for being such an informative guest, and we obviously look forward to continuing good news out of the World Trade Center.
Thanks, Arnie.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time to Can Do, when our guest will be Drake Dobke, Montana restaurateur and creator of Sakatumi and Mishi Asian-themed restaurants. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.